I'm Larry Flick, and this is Feel the Spin on Sirius XM LQ. Thanks for stopping by and hanging out for a while. I hope you're going to stick around, because in the next hour, my long-awaited conversation with Clay Aiken. And it's going to be worth your time, because, baby, he spills it. Okay, so it's time for True Confessions.
Oh, is that what this is called?
it's what this moment is called. I voted for you on American Idol.
Oh, well, thank you.
I know.
You don't need to feel ashamed of that, I don't think.
It is a little shame-based because I'm... not because it's you. Not because it's you, but because I'm a man of a certain age for American Idol.
You know what? You'd be just be proud of it.
I'm Larry Flick, and this is Feel the Spin on Sirius XM LQ. You picked the best possible time to stop by for a visit because Clay Aiken is here. I will say it. I never thought I'd ever get you alone in a studio to have a chat. And here you are.
Here we are.
And you are one of three people I've ever voted for in American Idol. The other two being Kelly Clarkson.
Yeah, good choice.
And Adam Lambert.
Okay, yeah, that's it.
So I'm really excited to meet you.
Well, thank you very much.
Very, very excited to meet you. Clay Aiken has a brand new record. It's called Tried and True. And it's his first record for the Decca label, which is a really good label. And you worked with a really good friend of mine on this record, Dave Novak.
Oh, one of my... honestly...
Isn't he the greatest?
I've said, and it says it in the album, I've never had an experience with a record executive that's been as phenomenal. And the thank yous. I couldn't say enough about him.
He's a real musicologist.
Yeah, well, he's an encyclopedia of songs. And
yeah.
What year they were hits, et cetera. But he's big on collaborating things. You know, it was always a collaboration to get stuff done. He could call him up and say, you know, I don't think I want to do this or I want to try this. And he's like, okay, well, we can work that out. And we'd figure out, we never disagreed on anything. And if we did, we always figured out a way to make everybody happy.
He's also a British gentleman. So he knows how to, soothsay, as they were. So, it seems to me, being a longtime fan of yours, you were always meant to sing these songs. So normally when someone does a record like this, the obvious cliche question is, why do it now? And so for you, from me, the question really is, why'd you wait so long?
Well, that's exactly what I say to people who ask me, you know, why'd you do it now? It's really not about, you know, it's really more about why I waited so long. I mean, I think when you get into, when you come off of Idol and you are... my voice sounds so deep on this radio.
Headphones are the greatest, right?
I
want to
take this with me everywhere.
Headphones are...
I sound like a man.
You have no,
the first time ever.
Baby doll, you have no idea. I could carry this microphone and these headphones everywhere.
I would probably talk more than people wanted me to. But,
well, me too.
why can't I sound like this in real life?
I know.
Back to your question.
Yes, please.
I ended up, coming off of Idol, and people end up with the thrust into this new world, and people from a record label were telling me, oh, we want you to sing this, we want you to do that, we want you to sing this, and for the most part, if it wasn't specific songs, the concept of every album I've done in the past has been kind of dictated to me as far as what it was that I needed to sing. And I really enjoy everything that I've done. But there are some songs on some of the things that I've done that I don't ever want to sing again. This really was what I always wanted to do. And Dave Novak in particular was really the person who said, you know what? What do you want to do? And let's make that work somehow. And so I've always felt more connected to not only these songs, but this era and just the standard classic sound of these songs. The melodies are more beautiful and they let me sing versus focusing on the production and you know whether the song is pop radio friendly. It really allows me to it allowed me to kind of just do exactly what I wanted. We picked only songs that I'd want to sing live again. Had nothing to do with songs that were, you know, we didn't try to figure out what this song could do for us. We really tried to pick the songs that I felt I could do something with.
And so how much of all of this has to do with one of the things that the judges on American Idol dogged you with, which is don't be musical theater,
right?
Don't be cabaret. And I remember that first video for Invisible and thinking that it was a great song, even if it was about stalking someone.
Right.
It's like, he's looking through the window.
Right.
but that they were really trying to shove you into something that I wasn't always sure, even though I voted for you and I was a fan and I'm still a fan, that you didn't really want, but that you kind of tried to do because it was the natural line of progression.
Well, I think, you know, RCA, which I there are people over at RCA that I really enjoyed working with, and I don't have anything against RCA, but I think that it had to be a struggle for them to be handed someone. The record labels who take Idol contestants get handed the contestants that they get, you know. Mm-hmm. It had to be a struggle for them to be handed someone in the first place, but then to be a rock label, essentially, and to be handed me. You know, they didn't know what the hell was going on. They didn't know what the hell to do with me. So Invisible, I felt, honestly, was a good compromise at the time.
It was a good song.
It was a great song. It was not trying to make me, you know, it had a melody to it. I could sing it. It wasn't trying to turn me into something too much that I wasn't. But even still, you know, I think that, I don't know if the word musical theater, I mean, these songs right here, although two of them are from musical theater shows.
These are just great classics.
Yeah, they're great songs, but they, you know, I think the singing thing is not necessarily for men, is not, especially in the pop world today, is not necessarily the most appealing and culturally hip thing, necessarily. So the musical theater was not, it's not about musical theater, because I did that 2 years ago, and I've always said anybody who cracks on musical theater can kiss my ass, because those folks work harder than anyone else in the world.
Absolutely.
So it's a compliment to me, actually, now in hindsight. I think it was a struggle for folks to try to figure out what to do with me, and the natural thing for me to do, this album, mm-hmm. was not, maybe it wasn't commercial, they didn't believe it was commercially viable at the time, or they didn't think that it was appealing to a larger audience. And interestingly enough, I feel like they are completely bass-ackwards on that, because I feel like any success that we have had in the past 7 years, and I say we because it's not just me, it's a lot of people who do stuff, but any success that we have had in the past 7 years has been because when I came off of Idol, I didn't depart so far from what I had sung on the show. You know, other folks came off the show and went from singing, you know, classic top 40 oldies and whatnot to singing hip hop.
Right.
You know, and folks pick up the CD, they love so-and-so, and, you know, Justin Guarini when he sang on the show, and they pick up a CD and it's R&B, and they're like, wait, I didn't vote for this. And so I think that any level of success from that first album came from the fact that, yes, it was original songs that people didn't know, but they sounded somewhat similar to what people expected from me.
Absolutely.
And had we gone, maybe, had I done this album at first, it could have done even better, just because I think it's really what folks had heard, that what they voted for, and what I was most comfortable doing. I like to think when I listen to this album, I sound more comfortable singing these songs than I did with
anything. It's very relaxed.
Yeah.
It's very relaxed. The album we're talking about is called Tried and True by Clay Aiken, who's visiting with me here on Sirius XMLQ. I'm Larry Flick. And these are songs I understand to be just part of the history of your life, because you enjoyed music as a young person and you shared music with your mom and all of that. Were there songs that you thought, not ready to sing yet?
In what way? Not ready to sing yet?
In terms of life experience, in terms of your voice yet. I mean, there's some songs that singers have to live life a little bit longer in order to really do justice to. Are there any of those that you're waiting for?
I don't really know. I think that I do approach songs in some ways if I haven't had the experience, and try to do it in an acting way. I mean, not that I'm some Olivier Award winning actor, but I still
but you put some characterization into what you're doing.
You have to kind of, you know, I think there are people who play roles that they've never lived through.
So what songs were on the list that didn't make it onto the album?
We actually recorded a few and ended up being bonus tracks. Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, the Neil Sedaka song. Who's Sorry Now, Connie Francis. Esso Besso was a song that I'm trying to remember some of them that mm-hmm. Ended up who sang it? Paul Anka sang it. Build Me a Buttercup I did for the live TV special, which we recorded for PBS, and we actually never really recorded it for the album, and I've always wondered why.
It's a good song.
Why did I not record it for the album? If people buy there are two versions of the CD in the stores. There's the normal CD, and then there's a deluxe version that has a DVD on it. And it has, I believe it has the video Build Me Up Buttercup on it.
Okay.
But it was a great song. I sang it on Idol, and I wonder if that's why, because Mac the Knife I sang on Idol, and Unchained Melody I sang on Idol, and right. Maybe we were like, maybe we just shouldn't record everything.
All the Idol songs. I gotcha. Were there any songs that were off limits?
No. I mean, well, we started finding songs, just old songs, and the key was to try to find songs from the 50s and 60s. Try to find the best songs of the past 50 years, and that were really kind of crooner songs. And as we did that, we started discovering, okay, these songs are really mostly in the 50s and 60s, so since we've got to cull this list down anyway, we'll kill some of the songs from the 70s. So I believe one song, and I can't remember what it was, made the list, and we were somewhat excited about it, and then we found out it came out in 1971, and we were like, I've got to get rid of it, just because it made more sense.
Well, next album, right?
Yeah, maybe
next
so.
Album. Clay Aiken with me here on Sirius XMLQ. So, When you look at the path you've been following, this feels like a natural place for you to be. And it's you know, as you were talking about this and as I was listening to Tried and True, it reminds me of an artist who also has had a beautiful long career and took a lot of knocks for his style of singing as well, Barry Manilow.
You know, I actually almost said to you when we were talking about, you know, the label got handed a person. I thought sometimes I characterize that by saying to people, you know, they just didn't know what to do. They got handed Barry Manilow Jr. and they didn't exactly know what to do with him. I think sometimes people use that as some sort of insult, and I'm like, bring it on. He's been singing for 40 years.
Have you ever met him?
He did a Christmas special of mine a few years back.
Oh, that's right. I just remember first time I met him to interview him, I literally cried a little bit. Yeah. Like a total queen I am.
He's an icon. If I could have half of his career, I'd be happy. So, and it's not an insult to me at all. It's a compliment. I like it.
So do you view the future as one where you'll be continuing to interpret great songs?
You know, I would love to. I mean, I think every song, whether it's original or cover, is you know, got to be an interpretation, because unless I write it, I'm covering somebody's song anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I really kind of hope so. I've always said that I think that what I really would like to do, I've said in the past that some previous albums were judged on. We always had to find the song that this one seems radio friendly, or this one seems like it would be a good commercial, this, that, or the other. We could license this song or whatnot. And this time I've said that hopefully every subsequent album will be something I enjoy singing live, because there are songs on previous albums that I recorded and have never sung again, ever. There's one particular song that I couldn't sing for you right now, because I've only sung it one time in my life, and that was in the studio.
What song was that?
It's a song called Touch off the first album.
I remember that song.
It upsets my fans because I won't sing it live. There's nothing about it that appeals to me.
It's not very good. Please don't be mad.
The rest of the album is okay, people.
I know. Trust me, your fans will find me.
I think they know because I don't sing it ever.
It's
not my thing. And I said every song that I do from here on out, I want to make sure is a song that I will want to sing live, that I want to do live and tour with, because I have more fun doing that. And so that's what everything on here is, and that's what everything will be hopefully on every subsequent album.
So which of these songs, after you laid down maybe that first pass of vocal, did you think, I'm nailing this? This fits me perfect.
You know, I never said I'm nailing this, because I thought that would be a little conceited. But every one of these was chosen because we had the list of songs. I went into the bathroom and sang them in the shower. I went into my garage and sang them, and I thought, you know, if it doesn't feel right in the garage, then it's not going to feel right in the studio. And all of them felt that way. And most of them were, you know, interestingly enough, the quickest album I've ever recorded in my life. We did the vocals in Germany. We did the orchestra in London in October, November of last year. And then I went to Germany for a little over a week and a half. I guess about a week and a half in Hamburg because the producer lived there and I had to do my vocals in Germany, and I recorded 15 songs in 3 days.
Wow.
And so and
so you were in the zone.
It was, well, because all of them were just very easy, and the last time I had an easy
they were easy. See, I'm going to be conceited for you. They were obviously easy for you because these are not easy songs. We're talking about Unchained Melody. We're talking about It's Only Make Believe. We're talking about Crying, which is probably one of the hardest songs in the world to sing.
Well, when it's something that you're comfortable with, I think it becomes, you know, everybody's got a job that. I mean, I'd look at an accountant and I think, oh, I could never do that. But to them, it's boring and easy. And to me, certain songs.
I gotcha.
And the last time that happened to me was when I did the Christmas album, interestingly enough. When we did the Christmas album in 2004, it was a relatively painless process. And I went in and you know, some of these other songs, I'll go in the studio, like Invisible or others, I'll go in the studio, I'll sing it through. Be like, oh, okay, let's take that first verse again. Okay, let's take it again. Okay, and again, and again, and again. And we just have to pick the ones that make me sound the coolest. But but with this one, it just they were very natural and easy. So
it sounds like you're finally just doing what you want to do. So Clay Aiken with me here on Sirius XM LQ. Let's pick a song to play from Tried and True. What would you like to play?
Let's see. One of the ones that I haven't gotten to perform live that I like the most is What Kind of Fool Am I? Sammy Davis Jr.
Such
song.
A good song.
Yeah,
let's check that out. Go on.
No, well, no, it's interestingly enough one of those songs that that would be musical theater in some ways. It came from Stop the World, I Want to Get Off.
And good, though.
It's one of my favorite. David Sanborn played, we were fortunate enough to get David Sanborn to play on the album and play on that track. And I just love what he does with the sax, and I really always love that song.
Well, here's What Kind of Fool Am I by Clay Aiken from the album Tried and True on Sirius XM LQ. From the album Tried and True, that was Clay Aiken with What Kind of Fool Am I. I'm Larry Flick, in studio with Clay Aiken here on Sirius XM LQ. The album Tried and True is out now, and it is it's a great album to unwind to. It's a great Sunday morning record. It's a really good Sunday morning record.
Oh, yeah, good. Well, thank you.
Drinking coffee and reading the paper, just easing into life. It's really a lovely, lovely record. Now, you do know where you are, right? You know what station you're on?
Of course.
Okay, so, because as I said at the beginning of our conversation, I never thought I was going to get you in this studio. I must have requested an interview with you every time you did something.
Well, interesting. And
they were like, oh, hell no. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll see someday. I'm never going to give it up. I'm never going to give it up. So it's really, really nice to have you here. How does it feel to be publicly out?
Well, it seems public. How does it feel? I don't know that it feels different. I think people expected. I take that back. It does a little bit, but I think people assumed that it was some sort of huge burden off my shoulders in the sense that now I don't have to hide it and be secret about it. But the truth was, I wasn't really hiding it anyway. I mean, people who knew me and worked with me and, you know, had anything to do with me, I was open and out with for a while.
Now, a lot of people say that, but at the same time, whether you realize it or not, there are a lot of folks around you who seem very, and I'm not saying about you specifically, but a lot of people who are in the public eye who come out, a lot of the people who, and maybe you didn't know it, are very invested in making sure that no one talks about it. Were you aware of that?
Well, I will say this. The people who I was, who have been around me, and actually, I'm with a new label now,
right.
and the publicity firm that I've been with for the past few years has been relatively, was sort of the catalyst for me to actually making that statement, but publicly. I would imagine that probably the first few years of my career, so to speak, there might have been a little bit of, not pushback, a little bit, but you know, I never ever really found anyone. I never felt anyone telling me not to. I think that if anyone did tell me not to do anything or try to protect that or keep people from talking about it, it was probably based on the fact that they felt like I wasn't ready for it yet.
Okay.
I think people were protective of me, even the ones who knew probably maybe 3-4 years ago, especially because I had made the decision I didn't want to talk about it right now. I didn't want to be defined that way, and no one really wants to be defined that way.
No, of course not.
I didn't want to be defined that way. I had family who didn't know, and that was probably one of the biggest struggles for me was the fact that, you know, I had always made the decision to myself. I'd always felt like I am not going to burden, say, my grandparents with this right now, given the fact that it's so public for them, and it's not exactly the same situation. They still had people coming to their, you know, they have the same last name as me. They were having people come to their door and just to meet them.
Right.
And I felt you know, from where I'm from, I felt like I didn't really want to have to burden them with that in their you know, twilight years. And so that was a concern of mine. It was, I don't think it was ever really too much about the career, only because I figured most people kind of figured it anyway. But it was, it had a little bit to do with that, and it had a lot to do with the fact that I just don't think it's important, and I don't think it's necessary, and I still, to some extent, find it silly and almost marginalizing when you look at this. I've said a few times this week, you look at the CNN scroll, and it seems like every week there's Ricky Martin comes out as gay, right. Shelley Wright comes out as gay.
Right.
When it becomes a news story, I got called not too long ago by a TV news program because a Christian artist had come out as a lesbian, and they wanted me to come on and talk about it and so on and so forth. And I just thought, well, you know, the more we make it news, the more it's news. And
absolutely.
The truth is, if you, I mean, like I said, you know, no one comes out as straight, obviously. I'm sure. How many times have you said that?
Absolutely.
Right?
And I totally feel you, because I'm a firm believer. I'm not the outing guy. There are other people who believe that, you know, you should drag people out of the closet. I'm not that guy, because I remember once being asked if I was gay in front of my mother before I even knew.
Right.
Which was really weird. And I thought, even if I was, I wouldn't say yes.
Exactly. I mean, isn't it?
And I was 13. I didn't know at 13.
There's something to be said also, and this is, I don't know how much I'd have to lie on a couch and get a psychiatrist in here to tell you how much of this had to do with it. But there is something to be said for that whole phenomenon. If you get backed into a corner, you start swinging. You know,
absolutely.
I think naturally, if we get back into a corner, you start swinging. And so I don't necessarily blame. I mean, I will say I do have an issue with politicians who oppress.
We all do.
Who oppress,
we all do.
Gay people.
But there's a difference.
And are gay at the same
right.
time.
But there's a difference between a politician, you know, like the dude in Iowa or wherever he was. And
right.
The, you know,
Idaho.
Idaho. And Clay Aiken.
Right. Well, you know.
Do you know what I mean?
If you don't,
it's
if you're being oppressive
difference.
And you are at the same, yeah, as long as you're not actively
You saying
to,
I am or I'm not doesn't change my day. It makes
right.
it more pleasant.
But I also obviously was never doing anything to oppress my people.
Just singing your song. So, but what was it like? I have to ask you. What was it like to read all of those awful stories in the tabloids about you?
I think to some extent, I mean, I think I always told myself, and I believe it's true, that a lot of the stuff that was said was specifically to get under my skin, and to try to get a reaction out of me. I mean, they started very early on with slight things about, we think he's dating such and such, or some. I remember getting on a plane one time, flying home from New York to Raleigh one time, and not when I got home, but a few weeks later, I saw a story in one of the trashier magazines, The Inquirer or something like that, that talked about how I was laying all over the guy who I was with, and I thought to myself, now come on, seriously, folks. Yes, maybe I was with that person, but I'm not stupid. If I'm not going to be out, I'm not going to be laying on him in public. And I just thought to myself, well, this is clearly, and then they obviously get progressively worse, and I always thought, well, you know what, the truth is, I think they realize that they can say it because I'm not going to respond. And if I do respond, they've got another story. So I always said it was kind of, I liken the tabloid sometimes to bullies, because, I mean, they essentially are that. If they know they're going to get a, that's what a bully does. Bullies pick on you because they want a response. And trust me, I got bullied as a kid and as a teenager and sometimes still today. And so
I completely relate to that as well.
The best defense my mother taught me years ago was just to ignore people. And eventually, you know, they have to relent in some way, because if they're not going to get a response out of you. So I always kind of said, you know, no matter how bad they got, and sometimes they were like, you know, I'm not leaving the house today.
No, the stories were brutal. The stories were brutal. And I remember very many times being on the air, and we would have no choice but to talk about it, obviously. Mm-hmm. And just wondering, you know, there's a salacious part of the story that's kind of, you know, interesting. But then there is the part that says, you know, sometimes when people would debate, you know, why hasn't he said something?
Mm-hmm.
And my argument has always been, you don't know where that person is in his life, with his family, and just because you think you know it doesn't mean his mama knows it.
Right, and I think that's,
And what would you do, think about the day in your life, the day before you came out,
mm-hmm.
and someone told everyone, someone told your mama before you told her.
Exactly. And that's kind of where it was for me, because even with the People magazine story, I said, you know, I made sure I went and spoke with my grandmother before and talked to her and told her.
How did she take it?
She, you know what? My grandmother is a champ. You
How
know,
old is she?
She's 83. Oh, God, I should know better. I think she's 83 or 84.
I can't believe you even told her.
Well, but the other alternative was for her to pick up People magazine and see it on the cover.
That was dumb.
I went up there. I took my younger brother with me, who's a Marine and is about the polar opposite of me. And I said, Brett, you got to go with me because I want her to see us together and see, I need that support with me. And she just looked at me and she said, Well, I love you anyway. And I thought, well, that was pretty easy. Of course, I was bawling. But
Well, sure, but from an 80-something-year-old woman who comes from a completely different world, different
and North Carolina, too. It's not. We're pretty relevant. We voted for Obama this time, but we may
want our elders to understand, but I don't think it's fair for us to expect them to understand.
No, and I'm absolutely with you. I'm 100% with you, and I absolutely agree that, you know, with people over a certain age, you know, you have to be patient. They come from a different world. I mean, my mother went to segregated schools, and, you know, that's a different world. Mm. It's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. But I will say this: my grandmother has been, and my mother is doing the best that she can too to try to say, listen, you know, it is the reality, and you know, I'm not going to change it. He's not going to change it. He was born like this, and we love him.
Bravo.
So they've done,
Bravo.
They've done
and
a good job.
And I'm guessing that you're from a church-going family.
Yeah, relatively religious family, which makes it a little bit of a challenge sometimes.
No, but that means that if they're a Christian, then they're true Christians.
You know
because
what?
True Christians love one and all.
Exactly, and I think that's a key that sometimes frustrates me, because I believe that some folks look at religion or look at the church or look at Christians and think, okay, well, they're all bigots. But the truth is, there are some. Oh, yes, there are. We know plenty of them. We see them on TV because they're the loudest ones. But, but the majority of religious people are.
Yeah, and I'm a firm believer. I don't practice a specific faith right now. I consider myself religious and God-believing, but I'm not the Catholic I was raised. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe that the hateful Christians are actual God-believing people.
Right. And they're also not the majority.
And I know that as well. One of the things I've learned in doing this show is that there are a lot more loving Christians in the world than there are hateful.
Yes. They're just not as loud as some of the other ones
are. It's true. Clay Aiken with me here on Sirius XM LQ. I'm Larry Flick. When did you know you were gay?
That's a very loaded question. When did I know... really know the answer to that. People, I debate it every once in a while. I can look back now, of course, and tell
when
you
was
it was,
the,
when I was
when,
in second I, grade, probably.
I was going to say, when was the first time a boy made your toes curl?
I don't know that I knew what that was. I remember.
It doesn't have to mean you knew what it was love.
No, I can go back.
Or that it was sex. We're not talking about sex.
Well, I can look
We're
back.
About making your heart go pitter-pat.
I don't know that the heart thing. Let me tell you this way. I can look back into at second grade and... God, if my mother is listening to this, she's probably having a little bit of trouble. But I think we're safe and assume she's not. I can look back in at second grade and think, I used to love watching wrestling on TV. And it
was funny. We
it
all
had
did,
nothing
Clay.
To do with,
we all
with
did.
The athletic.
It was their nice heinies. Come on, Clay, let's tell it.
So I can look at it that way. And I used to, second grade, I can look back and realize it. But I guess I didn't. And I didn't even realize that there was an attraction probably until maybe until high school. But there were guys who I always thought I wanted to be like. You know, I was not the coolest kid in school, but I had a lot of the cool kids were friends with me. And I always thought I wanted to be like such and such. I'm not going to say anybody's name right now because
of course not. You don't have to.
But I always thought I wanted to be like so and so. And I've realized later that it was not that I wanted to be like so and so. I wanted to be with so-and-so.
Like a lot of us, that's very similar to my experience. I remember, you know, I talked about good old Peter, I only say his first name, from high school.
What a convenient first name, too.
I know.
For this story.
You know, Clay. But, and how I just worshipped him and how I just wanted to be just like him. And, and you know, it wasn't until I was in college and out, because I came out when I was 21, I didn't realize until then that I was just desperately in love with him.
And I went through, by the time I got to college, I think when I got to college, I finally started to realize that I was either gay or bisexual.
Oh, we all do that. Yeah.
I assumed that I was going to be. I assumed that I was going to be. That I was probably more gay, but that I would marry a woman and just make it work somehow. And, you know, growing up in where are you from?
I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah. Growing up in North Carolina, I think, is slightly different than New York, San Francisco, any big city, really. You don't know what gay looks like in North
Carolina. I'll tell you what, though. I'm from a part of New York. I'm from a blue-collar Italian Catholic neighborhood. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what gay looks like up there either because everyone hid.
If you don't, exactly. Either you hide or you can't hide.
Or you were called a faggot.
Right. And so I grew up knowing maybe two gay people, and they were not able to hide as well, I guess. And I think I figured that, well, I'm not like that. So maybe I am bisexual. Maybe I joked with somebody yesterday. I said, I feel like my X chromosome has a little bit of a dangler on the, my Y chromosome has a little bit of a dangler on the side.
You're so funny. Clay Aiken with me here. But what you're really saying is that you're one of those men. And I am one. And I think a lot of people listening right now are who, I believe very few of us are 100% gay, lesbian, bi, straight, whatever. There are definitely women that I've had in my life whom I loved intimately. And there, I every once in a while, very rarely, see a woman who I think, oh, wow.
I don't know that I do that.
It happens once a year, you know. It's usually a TV star, but anyway. But you know what I mean. I think we're all capable of reacting to people regardless of
there's an emotional aspect to it. But I don't know that it was true when I was young I was in college. I don't know that I wasn't just trying to be something that I felt I needed to be. And to get to the final answer to your question, I didn't really actually completely 100% admit it to myself and realize that I was gay. I mean, I realized it, but I didn't 100% embrace the fact that this is it and it's not changing until I got on Idol, until I got out to L.A. And
when the whole world's watching, your heart, Clay.
Well, I got out there and
the whole world's watching, and that's when you realize.
I got to L.A. and I met a various array of people, and they were gay men and women who, you know, were. It became much more normal to me. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
And I thought, wait a second. So I don't have certain stereotypical, extremely stereotypical affectations necessarily, but clearly gay people don't, you know, it's exactly that. It's a stereotype.
Yeah.
And I also was in an environment where folks were very accepting. And you know, gay folks worked alongside straight folks and nobody seemed to care. People didn't talk about it that much. And I thought, you know what? Okay, well, this is it. And I found someone who I was attracted to for the first time. And once you go, you never go back.
So. And shazam! And so, again, talking to Clay Aiken here on Sirius XM LQ. His album is called Tried and True. And God, I could talk to you for hours, but I'm going to have to let you go in a moment, but I really admire you for being so candid, and I appreciate it a lot. Are you having fun being a dad?
I am.
I don't think I could do it.
I don't think I could because
I don't know if I have the patience.
Well, you know what's funny is I taught special ed before
I started
on Idol, and I
voted for you. I was voted for you. I was like wild card. So yes, I remember the special ed footage.
I have pulled 3 feet of string out of a child's ass before, and I have the patience. I think when I worked in the classroom, I got things thrown at me. I got spit at, peed on, everything, and I had a lot of patience. With your own child, it's a little different. I don't think I have that patience anymore, but I also find that when I was in the classroom, I was really good at tough love. Like, I could be really, really strict. And with your own child, when he gets those, like, little crocodile tears and those puppy dog eyes and pouts, I stick with it, but it's tougher. It's tougher to be tough.
They don't know that daddy's a steel magnolia, you can watch it.
I don't. We're not on TV, so I can show you a picture of him. We don't show. I never show.
And
pictures
you shouldn't. And you shouldn't
of him to anybody. Daddy lives his life in the public eye a little more than.
Oh my God, he's beautiful.
He is.
See, I look at that and I think I could do that, and then I think, yeah, you could take that now. I'll be a lesbian and have my cat, so it's okay. And so with all of this, I'm going to ask you a very, very personal question. You do not have to answer, but I can't let you go without asking. Are you in love now?
I am not. This is how I answer that question when people ask me. Am I in love with my son? Absolutely.
Very
I'm absolutely in love with my son. I'm not looking in the other category. That's
all right. So he's not on the market right now, boys. Back off. Wow. I feel like I've waited a long time to talk to you, and I feel like it was worth every second. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. It's been very nice.
It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Clay Aiken's record, again, is called Tried and True. It is an absolutely lovely record of some of your favorite songs sung really with a lot of heart. A lot of heart. God, there are so many good songs. What song would you like to go out with?
Let's finish up with Can't Take My Eyes Off You.
That's a good one. Very, very good one. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you.
I hope to see you again very soon.
Absolutely.
This is SiriusXM LQ. That was Can't Take My Eyes Off You by Clay Aiken. That's from his new album, Tried and True. Okay, so we have to talk for a second about Clay. Wasn't he fun? I know. I was so surprised, too. I thought he was going to be aloof or a little distant, but he was so charming. I could have talked to him for hours. I really, really enjoyed him. I'm Larry Flick, and this is Feel the Spin on Sirius XM LQ. Thanks for hanging out with me today.